The following is a paid program.
It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into our show on location today out at the Keen Barn on the Keeneland campus, where it is the tradition of the signing of the Maker's Mark commemorative UK bottles today. And there's a huge crowd here. They had some people trying to line up actually on Wednesday. They started lining up yesterday afternoon. And as I sit here, a good 30 yards maybe from where the signing table is, there is a line that is snaking all the way back to where we are of Kentucky fans with their Maker's Mark bottles in hand to get them signed by members of the 2012 championship team. And that line snakes out the door and is out through the back of the building. So it is an amazing phenomenon over the years with these commemorative Maker's Mark bottles. Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk about the UK spring game that's coming up tonight with John Hale from the Courier-Journal. And then Mike DeCourcy will be with us. Mike's with us on Fridays all during the college basketball season, so we'll kind of put a bow on this college basketball season and get some of Mike's thoughts on the tournament and looking ahead to next season. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. The members of the 2012 team that are here today include Marcus Teague, John Hood, Twani Beckham, Jared Polson, Sam Malone, Darius Miller, and then a couple of players that Cal missed on, Rob Samuels and Bill Thomason from Maker's Mark and Keeneland, respectively. Cal, however, is not here. If you follow him on Twitter, as I can't imagine hardly any of you don't, he was in Chicago yesterday for the debut of a documentary on one of his former players, Derrick Rose, and Cal got stuck in Chicago, so was not able to make it back for this event this morning, so was told that he's going to do a signing for all of the people that have tickets that are in the line today later this month. So there'll be an announcement coming soon on that if you're in line listening or if you've already gone through and you didn't get the word on that. Cal will do a signing to make it up for all the people that are here. But the main one, if anybody here in Kentucky will get a shot at getting the Cal bottle signed at some point, but it'll be great to get all these former players, and then you can work on getting the others who are not here over some time. This is a program to benefit the CATS program at the University of Kentucky. It's a five-year commitment from Maker's Mark and Keeneland to use the proceeds from this commemorative bottle program to fund the CATS program at UK, the Center for Academic and Tutorial Services for UK Athletics, and may have done some really good things with those funds already. Let's get to a little Wildcat news. The blue-white game, as I said, tonight's coming up at 6 o'clock. That's Eastern time. 5:30 is when coverage will begin on the UK Sports Network from out at Kroger Field. It is going to be the first string, essentially, I think, offense and defense on the blue team, and the quarterbacks and the specialists will play for both teams. And there'll be a few guys you won't see. Cash Daniel, I know, was announced yesterday, is not going to participate. He's still got a little physical issue he's overcoming from the end of the season. Nothing major that will affect him this fall. But as John Summerall, the new inside linebackers coach, said, they know what Cash can do. So in a game like this, it's always fun to see some of the young guys that haven't played a lot that you don't know as much what they can do. Do they step up with the lights on, so to speak, tonight? Because especially among receivers and defensive backs are two areas we've talked about that will be high priority for somebody to assert themselves between now and the first game on the 31st of August. And tonight would be as good a time as any for somebody to make a bit of a move. So we'll see if that happens. And if you can't be there, you can tune it in on the SEC Network. You can listen to our call on the UK Sports Network. We're going to go ahead and get to a break. When we come back, we'll bring on John Hale, CJ, and we'll talk a little bit about UK spring football. It's the Leach Report on location at Keeneland today.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Welcome back into the show. We're coming to you today from the Keene Barn at Keeneland, where they're doing the annual signing of the commemorative Maker's Mark bottles. And this year is the culmination of a five-year program of celebrating the championship teams at UK. And those proceeds going to the CATS program at the university. John Hale joins us now to talk first about the UK spring game that is coming up tonight at Kroger Field. And I just see a story posted at courier-journal.com that you're tweeting about, John. Five players that you're most interested to watch in the game tonight. You got Landon Young at the top of the list, I assume, to see how he's recovered from his knee injury.
Yeah, I talked to Landon a little bit earlier this week, and he was in really good spirits, said he's close to 100% going to be full go tonight, which is an encouraging sign. It's important, I think, for him that it's been a while since the injury, since it happened in August, right before the season. It's not a situation where they've rushed him back by any means. He's actually well on schedule, and by the time games start in the fall, he should be back to normal 100%. But he and Coach John Schlarman, the offensive line coach, have both said really positive things about the spring and some of the strides he made off the field and understanding the offense and reading defenses and zeroing in on areas he needed to get better while he was rehabbing. So I'm interested to see how he looks tonight for sure.
The next on your list is two backup quarterbacks to Terry Wilson, Gunnar Hoke and Walker Wood. And it's, I guess, conceivable that the blue-white game tonight could be Gunner's senior day game, right?
Yeah, that was it was interesting last week after their Saturday scrimmage. Mark Stoops got asked about Gunnar Hoke. He's going to graduate in May, and so obviously he would then be eligible for graduate transfer to go play somewhere else right away in another FBS school. And you expect that question just to get a, oh, we're not worried about that, we're focused on this or whatever. And Mark was very upfront about how they were going to sit down and have a conversation after spring practice, and he obviously wanted Gunner to stay, but he understood Gunner has to do what's best for him and for his family. Darren Henshaw, the quarterback's coach, was a little less assured about that on Tuesday, said that as far as he knows, Gunner's going to be here and all their conversations have been that way. But it's a real possibility. And if Gunner leaves, then Walker Wood's the only returning scholarship quarterback on the roster. And obviously he hasn't played in a game, and he's still working his way back from all those injuries and apparently has been pressing a little bit this spring. And then you're in a situation where you're looking at two true freshmen and Imani Gilmore and Nick Scalzo coming in the fall and maybe competing for that number two job, which is obviously a situation Kentucky doesn't want to be in, especially considering how Terry Wilson plays and with his running, that, you know, one hit and he could be out for a bit.
Yeah, I suspect they'll have some kind of package involving Lynn Bowden, no matter who the backup is for that situation, right?
Yeah, and that's Lynn's a guy I could have put on that list easily. I was trying to look at maybe some off the beaten path guys, but they're going to have to get Lynn Bowden the ball as much as they possibly can this fall. I mean, I would assume he's going to be the focal point of the offense. They're going to throw it to him in the slot. They're going to hand it off to him at times. He's going to do a wildcat quarterback thing. I think he'd move outside the receiver and run down the edge of the field to get downfield at times. He's going to do a lot of different things, and absolutely wildcat quarterback, I think, is going to be one of those.
And and we may not see that tonight because, as Stoops said, they'll be pretty vanilla. But, it sounds a lot like what they could do with Lynn is a lot of stuff that the Brooks staff did with Randall Cobb, including returning punts, which Lynn has done quite well.
Yeah, it absolutely. I think that's going to be a situation. I'm interested to see how much he returns punts because they obviously kind of pick and choose their moments with him last year there. He didn't do it every time, but he returned two touchdowns. So it's a weapon he has, and I'm sure that they're going to use that at times this coming season too. It is interesting that using this wildcat quarterback, would your starter is a guy who also runs and then throws better than Lynn does, how it's an equal change of pace, but Lynn just has so much talent in space that you've got to find ways to give him the ball.
The other two guys on your list of guys you're most interested to watch tonight are two new secondary players, and there are so many new faces there, or if not new faces, guys who are going to be in more prominent roles. So why did you focus in on Brandon Echols and Quandre Mosley?
Yeah, I think at safety, at least, we know a little bit of what's coming. Devontae Robinson and Jordan Griffin have played a lot, so have Tyrell Agent and Yusuf Corker, their backups right now. But at cornerback, there's just no experience on the roster. And Cedric Dort played in 7 games 2 years ago. He told me 3 of those were probably on defense. The rest were on special teams. And then there's not another single guy on the roster who's played in more than 1 game. Jamari Brown and Stanley Garner both played, I think, once last year while using that redshirt rule. So I'm looking at those 2 junior college transfers, Brandon Echols, Quandre Mosley, as guys who need to come in and play right away. I think it's been hard to get any of the coaches to say there's any separation at that position this spring. Obviously, they're all kind of learning together. But the closest they've come is Brandon Echols saying that he's been really impressive and more often than not has been a guy who's looked good there. So I would expect him to have one of those number one jobs. Mosley got here a little late in January. He had some academic stuff to finish up, so maybe he's a little bit behind. But when you recruit 2 junior college guys, both of whom only have 2 years to play, it's to play right away. And given the other inexperience at that position, both those guys could have big games tonight and use that as kind of a jumping off point for the summer, but by the fall they certainly are going to be counting on the play a lot.
Doing interviews, listening to news conferences, et cetera, over the course of these past several weeks with football, anything that has been particularly noteworthy to you or anything where you think you're kind of reading between the lines and finding out something that maybe was unexpected or surprising?
I think it's interesting that how positive they've been about the defensive line, which is a good sign because they have so much, you know, kind of roster turnover at the second and third levels of that defense other than inside linebacker. So that defensive line is going to have to be much better. And Brad White basically said that's where they're getting their pass rush right now. Part of that's because they're not happy with the outside linebackers. But the other part of it is because those guys have stepped up and they've been particularly high on Quentin Bohanna at nose guard. It would not shock me at all if we get to the fall and Lynn Bowden and Quentin Bohanna are basically the 2 best players on the team and guys who at the end of the season have NFL draft decisions as juniors. I think that's a really positive sign, and obviously depth and numbers and the rotation they have on the line is going to be helpful there, getting a guy like Josh Pascoe back. But they've got other weapons there, and if the defense is not going to completely collapse from, you know, what was a really elite unit last year, it's going to be because that defensive line carries the way.
I know they said the defense was maybe got the better of it of the offense in the latest scrimmage last Saturday, as opposed to the other way around in the previous scrimmage. And I'm wondering, coaches on the defensive side said anything about seeing improvement in those outside linebackers that you referenced Coach White talking about a few weeks back?
Yeah, I think part of that, the scrimmage 2 weeks ago, apparently Boogie Watson was kind of limited and was limited for maybe the first half of spring. So he's a guy who wasn't playing much, and obviously he's really their only experienced guy there. So I think that has a big impact when he's not out there. So him getting back in the fold made a big difference. But those other guys are just young. I mean, Jared Casey's a early enrollee, true freshman who's playing maybe the number 2 Jack linebacker right now, competing for the starting job with a guy, Jordan Wright, who's not played very much because when you have the National Defensive Player of the Year, you don't get his backup in very often.
True.
So I think as it goes, these guys are going to get better. But Brad White also wasn't willing to use that as an excuse either. A couple weeks ago when he was really adamant about that, said that if you've been in the program for 2 years, you had enough practice reps where you should have these things down. So I would expect the freshmen coming in this summer, guys like J.J. Weaver, are going to be factors of that in that position battle too.
A quick basketball question on a couple of guys that fans, I think, are hopeful one or both might come back. Tyler Hero, Keldon Johnson. Do you think either will?
I would still be surprised, given that we're still waiting for Tyler's announcement. I think the chances are going up that he's going to come back. I mean, surely he's at least going to test the waters like Keldon is doing and go work out for teams and the combine. They haven't had really anybody other than Terrence Jones, who is a projected first rounder, come back for a second year. So I think the prudent path is to just assume they're going, but a guy like Tyler, I'm sure, watched BJ Washington this year really improve his stock. And both those guys know that if they came back and put in the work and played as well as BJ did, they could be lottery picks. They could be top 10 picks in a year. So I think that's at least opening the door to that scenario in a way you wouldn't have expected, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
Career-journal.com at @JohnHale_CJ on Twitter for spring game coverage tonight and more. So thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
John Hale, Courier Journal. take a quick break. We are at Keeneland, the Keene Barn. Maker's Mark commemorative bottle signing underway with members of the 2012 championship team. We'll be right back.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Back here to the Keene Barn at Keeneland and the steady stream of people with their commemorative Maker's Mark bottles are still streaming through. It's been going on for probably 3 hours or more now as the Kentucky fans stand in line to wait to get the bottle signed by members of the 2012 championship team who are on hand here at the Keene Barn. And we are joined now on the Kentucky Branded Hotline by Mike DeCourcy. He's with us all throughout the basketball season for these Friday sessions. And, Mike, we'll start with a little wrap-up of the tournament. We always hear about the random nature of the tournament or the luck factor or whatever. And maybe this year's a good example of that with a Virginia team that I think I'm right on this, was trailing in the final 15 seconds of their last three games.
That's correct. And, you know, even beyond that is look who they beat. They beat a three. They beat a five. They beat, in the Elite Eight, they beat a three. And then, of course, in the Sweet 16, they beat a 12. And they never had to play a team on the top two lines. And
that's amazing. I didn't realize that.
And, right. And what's interesting about that is through the course of the year, when they did play, they only played three teams on the top two lines through the entire season. They played Duke twice and lost both games, and they played Carolina once and won at Carolina. So one of the things that I talked about a lot in advance of the tournament relative to Virginia was they were tremendous against teams five and below, like below the five line. They were undefeated, and they were usually winning by huge margins. Close game against Louisville once, blew them out the other time, blew out Syracuse, for instance, which I think played an 8-9 game, if I remember right. So they were doing a lot of damage to those kinds of teams, but against the very top of the field, they didn't have a great success. And then, amazingly, through the course of the tournament, they didn't have to play any of them. So kind of interesting the way that all worked out, but They were a very skilled team, and they were a very sound team in the way they played together. And they were, you know, is it luck that Kyle Guy got fouled with 1.5 seconds left? I guess it was, but it wasn't luck that he stood up there and made three free throws under unbelievable pressure.
And, you know, Tony Bennett gets his commemorative ring and his jacket and a patch and a code to the secret room now as having won a championship. And yet if ball goes into backcourt and they don't secure it as quickly as they did to get it back up the court to send it to overtime against Purdue, he's being, you know, skewered again.
You know, amazingly, the young man named Grady Eifert for Purdue, who not really very tall for a power forward and not really powerful for a power forward and not super skilled, although he could make jump shots, basically lived his entire season on being in the right place at the right time. And I mean literally constantly was in the right place at the right time, always making sure that he was, even down to the offensive rebound he got with 17, 18 seconds left in regulation against Virginia that ultimately led to Ryan Klein being fouled and then missing one of two free throws that opened the door for Virginia. And on the free throw miss by Ty Jerome, I don't know what happened, but Grady Eifert ran to the three-point line on the right side and was covering no one and didn't get back inside in time as Virginia made the ball up the floor. Kihei Clark found the player that honestly Eifert should have been guarding, and Mamadi Diakite was able to put the ball in the goal on a 14-15 foot jumper. If Eifert doesn't lose his spot for the first time, really, probably the first time all season. I mean, he built his entire season on being in the right place at the right time. If he doesn't lose his spot there, Virginia probably goes home because there's no pass available then if he's not lost on that play. So just an amazing confluence of events for Virginia to be able to survive that series of three games.
We always look for trends, and in the first half of this decade that is ended for college basketball, you had John Calipari being on the cutting edge of using freshmen more heavily, and Kentucky had great success, and then Duke jumped on, and they won a championship in 15. And then in the second half of the decade, it's been more slanted toward veteran teams, and freshmen weren't particularly impactful in this Final Four. So is it too small a sample size to make a read? Is it just kind of, you know, because Duke and Kentucky could have easily been in this Final Four, or is there something that's changing on the landscape?
Well, one thing I'll say is that always is likely to vary by the class. The odds that you're going to have a terrific group of freshmen every single year is pretty, and I don't mean at any one school. I mean, like, from year to year nationally. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing that America turns out the level of basketball player it does every year, honestly. But it's not always going to be the level that, you know, there's not always going to be an Anthony Davis or a Jahlil Okafor or whoever. There's not always going to be one of those. And I realize that Zion was a pretty special player. But the class generally wasn't great. I mean, the group that John took to, I think they played in Egypt, if I remember correctly, in the U19s.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a great group. I went to the trials that year and was not impressed with the level of ability that was in that room. Now, Zion was not one of the players there, and obviously RJ wasn't, because he was on the Canada team.
He torched
that ultimately
him.
Beat the U.S.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a great group. And you know, Cam Reddish is being ranked, being projected as a top 10 NBA draft pick. Go look up Cam Reddish's freshman year numbers. They're not bad. They're pretty close to awful. And so it sort of shows that you can't I honestly thought that, you know, for Duke to get what they did out of that group was pretty impressive. And obviously, I don't think any of us realized coming in how incredible Zion was going to be. But the same with Kentucky's group. I mean, no one in Kentucky's group was projected to be, you know, just a dominant player. And none of them was, but they played really well. I mean, they had a really nice year for a group of freshmen that weren't expected to come in and play at the Kid Gilchrist or John Wall or Carl Towns level. I think the trick now for that group that Kentucky has is for them to be realistic about their approach to the NBA, because I think there are several NBA players there, but you can wreck that by trying to do it too early. And we've seen lots of players, one or two from Kentucky, from all over the country, that have thought, yeah, I'm ready to go, and then wound up never really making it. So you have to be careful. And from what Keldon has said in his declaration, he seems pretty realistic about it, and I think that's a great approach.
We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back with Mike DeCourcy, sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter, and the Big Ten Network as well. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, on location today out at Keeneland for the signing of the commemorative Maker's Mark bottles saluting the 2012 championship team. Proceeds benefiting the Cats program at UK.
Hi, folks. Jeff Kennedy with HKC Roofing. HKC has a full-time quality control supervisor on all our jobs. That's why we provide the best warranties in the roofing industry. We're so sure you'll love your new HKC roof, if you aren't satisfied, we'll pay a competitor to replace it. Call us now for your free digital roof analysis at 502-212-1081 or go online at roofyourhouse.com.
You do realize it's less than a month until Derby time, right? All the parties, all the big events, the races, you're gonna need to look sharp. So let me tell you where to go for those dazzling and sparkling things that the lady in your life will love. And that is Genesis Diamonds. They're stepping it up for Derby Week. You're not going to believe the selection that they have. Case after case of fantastic jewelry. New shipments of fresh cut diamonds straight from the diamond cutters in every shape and every size.
guaranteed best price, too, on these GIA-certified diamonds. Genesis is second to none. Nobody can touch their prices. Nobody can beat their selection. Nobody can give you a better warranty or guarantee, and nobody gives you higher quality. And they have the state's largest selection of fine Swiss timepieces from Breitling, Tag Heuer, and Omega. Hundreds and hundreds of amazing watches for men and women. Picked up one for my son last summer. Genesis Diamonds, my jewelry store. Go check them out in the Shelbyville Road Plaza next to Trader Joe's. It's where Louisville gets engaged. Gulfstream, Fairgrounds, Santa Anita, there's great racing all over the country, and you can get morning insight and turn it into afternoon profit with Racing with Bruno's BrunoWithTheWorks.com. Let Bruno and his team give you the inside info on which horses are training in a manner that suggests they're ready for a peak performance. They're sniffing out winners day in and day out at top tracks all over the country. Subscribe today to Racing with Bruno's BrunoWithTheWorks.com.
Big Blue Nation is passionate and loyal, and that's an audience you can reach when you advertise on the Leach Report. It's working great for HKC Roofing. Just listen to Jeff Kennedy.
They'll call in, just say, hey, you know, I heard you on the Tom Leach Show this morning, and, you know, BVN has a big following on the radio show, so I thought I'd give it a shot, and it's paid off. It definitely has paid off. We've gotten numerous calls from your show, so... It's been really good for us.
Email LeachReport@gmail.com to see how affordable it is to advertise on the Leach Report Network. You can target your message to the Louisville market only or reach out to a statewide network audience. It's your way to talk to Big Blue Nation every day. Email LeachReport@gmail.com or call 859-368-8276. Call 859-368-8276.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Back to the Kentucky Brandon Hotline. We're chatting with Mike DeCourcy from SportingNews.com. You mentioned Keldon going into the break. Keldon announcing he's putting his name in for the draft, but leaving up open the option to return, and talked about that wants to be in the lottery. And there's from the, a lot of the mock drafts, no consensus that that's going to happen yet. Tyler Hero, a similar situation in terms of being projected in the first round, but not maybe quite as high as Keldon. What should both of those guys be thinking about as they make this decision?
Well, I think the first thing that, you know, as Jerry West has said, it's about a career. It's not about where you get drafted. It's about whether you can build a career. And there are people who will say, just go and get in there and then you'll be fine. And those people have not studied it at all. There's an assumption that if you're good enough, you'll make it. And it's really not that simple. I mean, the higher up you are drafted, the more of an investment that organization has in you, both financially and, you know, and I guess from a PR standpoint of having selected you high. So if you have the ability to rise in the draft, then you absolutely should. I mean, I have a philosophy about someone like Reddish that I call, you know, I call the Tyler Ennis rule, which is if you can't really play and everybody thinks you can, then you should go ahead and take advantage of that lack of awareness. but a guy like Keldon or a guy like Tyler, those guys, they're players. I mean, they're going to be good players. But it is possible to put yourself in a circumstance where you create a disadvantage for yourself. And if you are drafted later, the investment of you is smaller. And you're also usually drafted by a team, therefore, that has around it better players. And, you know, they obviously are better, better suited to help you get better, and but there's less reliance on you, so you're more expendable. And it really becomes a difficult proposition for you at certain times. And yeah, you know, I think that a guy like Tyler, I think he has incredible potential, but I don't think that he's shown that he's ready to play in the NBA yet physically. I don't think he's shown that, you know, I don't think he has an NBA body at this point, but I think he will have an NBA game. And I think a guy with a game like his, if they're talking about him being in the 20s as a draft pick, that there's just so much more for him. But for me, the process, if you think it would help you, that's fine. But I don't think that someone who is projected to go that late with the level of ability that Tyler has is doing himself any favors by going.
What's going to this year? The storyline was certainly focused around Duke and that freshman class, and Zion in particular. Although maybe not coming into the season as much as it was pretty quickly after the start of it. What do you think the storyline or lines will be for the next college basketball season without that commanding presence of a Zion Williamson?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think that as it looks now, it depends on whether Ty Jerome remains. I mean, Ty is a guy who is kind of similar to Tyler, although he's played much more basketball. I don't know in terms of how he's valued. I don't know that he's valued at the level that he should be. But he's also won a championship now, and he spent 3 years developing. And he could look at it and say, I've done everything I came here to do, and so it's time to move on. And I think that's a reasonable position for someone in his circumstance. So if he decides that, then maybe the expectation that they would repeat would be diminished, and we wouldn't be looking at a team similar to, say, the Floridas of 2006 and 2007. But if he does return, I think that's where it goes first. If he leaves, then I think that maybe people will be focused a lot on if they get their guys back, the two Michigan schools, and several players from Michigan are now in the draft, and I don't know that any of them would be likely to stay in it. But again, you never know what players are going to do. But in the early projections that I did, NBC, ESPN, et cetera, the two Michigan schools were top five in both of them. So to have both of them ranked in the top five together would obviously be something that people would be focused on. And, beyond that, I think one of the interesting things is, can Duke, losing all that they are losing, and to this point, not really bringing in an overwhelming group. I mean, where do they head? I think people will be watching that very closely.
You will cycle back to this, a good element of good fortune can change storylines and directions. You think about Cal and now what he did in the first half of the decade, and then he hadn't been to a Final Four since 2015, and yet 2017, if Luke May's shot bounces off the rim, they go to a Final Four, and maybe with a good shot to win the championship. 2018, they weren't going to win the championship, but they had a shot in the air that would have sent them to the Elite Eight against an 11 seed, and it didn't go in. And then this year, one play at the end of regulation in the Auburn game. I mean, that's literally, one play 3 years in a row to get you to two Final Fours and on the cusp of another.
It's one of the reasons why I'm never comfortable with the way people who don't spend their lives inside this game judge coaches. The idea, Matt Painter's not been in a Final Four, so how good can he be? One free throw and they're in, and it didn't happen. If one free throw and John's got two titles and it didn't happen, the other one obviously being at Memphis.
Right.
If you're in that picture that often, you're doing a heck of a job. And I understand as fans, when you're in that picture, you want to get through every time. And you can look at moments and say, gosh, if this hadn't happened, we would have had that one too. And that's part of signing up to be a college basketball fan is that, one small break, one small mistake, and the players you're following are 18 to 22 years old for the most part. It can be more frustrating than some of the others because of the way the championship is decided. But to be in the Elite Eight 7 times in 10 years says that you're doing the right things. And, I think that Kentucky, again, pending a lot of different decisions, the funny thing, Tom, in that thing I talked about, that early poll that I did, I had Kentucky, I believe, number three. And I had Kentucky fans getting on my case that I had them too high. So, you know, it's funny how things can go around. You know, sometimes you rank a team five, six, eight, whatever, and they're yelling at you that you have them too low. I had a lot of people yell at me for not having Texas Tech in the rankings. And I'm like, do you realize how many guys are leaving? Well, we lost a lot last year. So it's obviously going to, you know, they're obviously going to be all replaced and they're going to be just as good now. I found it interesting. I really have a lot of optimism about next year, but maybe, at the time, I said Ashton was going, you know, would be back, and because I was convinced that a player with his ability, but his flaws, wouldn't make that mistake, and we've already learned that he won't. And, you know, I think part of what I did was based on Tyler making a smart decision, and maybe in the end he does or doesn't, I don't know. But I think if he returns and you've got the rest of those guys intact, you've got a chance to have a really special team.
Mike, we'll holler back at you once this all shakes out, but go see a good movie.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate having me on every year. I love getting a chance to communicate to the true UK fans and really honored that you continue to include me in your program, Tom.
Thank you, Mike. It's Mike DeCourcy. He is one of the best in covering the college game, and you can read him at sportingnews.com and on Twitter. It's at TSN Mike. And we'll wrap up this edition of the Leach Report from Keeneland in just a moment. The line of folks continues to stream past us here at the Keene Barn at Keeneland with UK fans bringing in their commemorative Maker's Mark bottles for the 2012 championship team. And members of the team here are signing the bottles, as is the tradition each spring. This is the end of a five-year commitment from Maker's Mark and Keeneland to a particular project, the CATS program at UK. And it's been a tremendous partnership for a long time now between Keeneland and Maker's Mark on these gorgeous bottles. I want to talk about our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week. It is the Grade 3 Lexington Stakes. It is coming up tomorrow here at Keeneland. It's the last chance locally to pick up Derby points. There's also the Arkansas Derby tomorrow that has points available. But there are some horses in the Lexington Stakes tomorrow that look to pick up the points that they can get here to get qualified to run in the Derby. And the horse that I think you should keep an eye on is Sueno, number 3. Talked to his jockey, Corey Lannery, yesterday for Keeneland social media. You'll see that pop up here soon, probably, at Keeneland Racing. Corey very confident about Sueno and how the horse has performed to this point. He thinks there's a lot more there. So Sueno's one to watch in the Lexington Stakes tomorrow here at Keeneland. Have a great weekend, everybody. Blue-white game tonight. If you can't be at Kroger Field, tune us in on the UK Radio Network. Coverage starts at 5:30 Eastern. This is the Leach Report Radio Network from Keeneland. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at Tom Leach.